communities, and the other is the building territory emergency response, which is having a direct effect on Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities in the Northern Territory, but I think also has a direct effect on us as a democracy in Australia. The employment policy is intended to cover off issues in terms of gaining real employment and training outcomes for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander workers in this country, and addresses some of the significant issues in terms of changes to community development and employment funds, and how we can ensure that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander workers are achieving the at least award of industrial instruments standards in their work in our communities. It may shock some people to know that there are workers in our community who are not receiving basic entitlements such as superannuation, land service leave, and leave entitlements. This, in terms of the Northern Territory Emergency Response Policy, this policy is something that has been carried over since the Howard government, and it is budget policy in terms of welfare reform, income management, and has actually suspended the Racial Discrimination Act in Australia. And it is something that we fundamentally believe that in a Western democracy and in the 21st century, we should not have a group of people targeted in terms of such discriminatory legislation, and we certainly should not be making legislation that repeals basic human rights legislation such as the Racial Discrimination Act. And with that said, I would like to move to the amendments to the policy. We have an inclusion at 6, which reaffirms the union movement's commitment to engage more Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander unionists in the union movement, and therefore representing more appropriately, I guess. At 12, we have an inclusion that calls on government to promote and actually fund, in terms of new funding, a holistic approach to employment outcomes for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander individuals. At 15, we have an inclusion which discusses the issues around basic entitlement issues in terms of CDP workers in this country, and talks about a strategy in terms of how we would deal with ensuring that those workers are accessing their basic entitlements such as superannuation and leave entitlements. At 20, there is an inclusion basically calling the government on their recently, that they have recently signed the UN Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous People, and calling to say that you have signed this protocol and that realistically now your engagement must be based around the document that you signed in terms of the UN Declaration. And then inclusion at 26, which addresses that although we realise the inherently discriminatory nature of the blanket income management reform that the Howard government put in place and the Rudd government are continuing, however, when communities choose to engage in a voluntary income management system, then that is their right to do so if they feel it will improve their community, but it has to be in community, by community. I think that this policy addresses the two salient and urgent issues in terms of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander issues in Australia at the moment, and I urge the Congress to pass.
Policy, and it's quite often not the most obvious fit for a lot of people. But as I said yesterday, the Police Federation of Australia fully supports the policy that's been developed. I think it's a real tribute to Tara that she's been able to put together such a disparate group of youth. The very broad church and getting a sensible policy in place that would be practical outcomes. I wasn't going to take this opportunity to talk through the policy so much, but perhaps the philosophy of the Police Federation, I think the majority of police in Australia. And the one thing I think has been lost over the last 18 months or 2 years since the intervention was announced by the previous government was the good news stories in Aboriginal Australia. And we've heard one of them yesterday directly from Dean Rioli, from the outcomes he is achieving in getting Aboriginal people into work across the country. And there are many other good news stories in the Aboriginal community that across the country that simply don't get reported. The Clontarf program in the Northern Territory is another example of the type of work that Dean's trying to carry out. I spoke yesterday after I spoke Pat from the MUA, talked about some of the outcomes that the MUA are achieving up in the Torres Strait, and also the West Australian Union Movement engaging with the Aboriginal community to promote Aboriginal engagement, Aboriginal employment across the country. I think the other thing that's important for me to say is that the Police Federation of Australia certainly never came out in strong support of what the previous minister, Mal Brough, did. In fact, we characterised the approach that Mr. Brough and the previous government adopted as ham-fisted, over the top, and not well thought through. As I said yesterday to the group, as a serving police officer in the Northern Territory with some 23 years' experience, I knew that the majority of Aboriginal men were not pedophiles. I knew that the majority of Aboriginal men were not pedophiles. Cared about their families. I also knew that the disintegration in many, many communities in the Northern Territory was a result of over 3 decades of government neglect. It was a byproduct. The reality is it's a byproduct of no educational opportunities, poor health care, poor housing, no employment, and very sadly, I think, in a country like this, very little hope for young people in those communities. What one would hope from this point is that the resources that seem to be being applied, despite the continued, I think, clumsy way that the government approaches these issues, is that there is a real improvement in the lives of Aboriginal people, not only in the Northern Territory, but across the country. I think from the police and a professional police officer perspective, what we want to see is a result of the intervention, and a lot of people prefer to call the emergency response now, but that's a slightly nicer word. But it's still an intervention, it's still an intrusion in people's lives. The Police Federation of Australia simply taking the position that where there's an identified need for police in any community, that those services be provided by professional, fully formed, properly trained, fully accountable police officers with the support of the local community. And even though it only forms a small part of this, this policy, I think it's a very, very important part. And can I just say one other thing that struck me when the announcement was made by Mr. Brough was I said at the time I made a number of observations and a lot of those got twisted and turned. I don't think he ever identified what he wanted the police to actually do in these communities. And as I've said, the police were never going to go to these communities and identify pedophiles around every corner. What the police have managed to do since we've been in these communities, and properly so, is develop a real relationship with Aboriginal people and Aboriginal communities. And if there's one fault in the current system, it's the rotation of police through these areas. And we really do need Northern Territory police officers full-time working in these communities, developing those relationships. And again, as I said yesterday, my view is a 20-year-old guy from Townsville. When I joined the police force 23 years ago, I'm a vastly different person with a much better understanding about Aboriginal people for that time in the Northern Territory. And you simply don't get that on a 3-month rotation in and out of the place. I think the other two issues, Sharon, if I might just speak about briefly. The Police Federation of Australia also took a position in relation to the proposed wind-up of the permit system to enter Aboriginal land. And I think the position I've taken and the Federation's taken, we've made it quite clear over time that the previous government and the current government simply couldn't make a link between the abuse of Aboriginal women and children and the permit system. And my view is there is no link. The government, the previous government, the current government displayed no link. And that if there's a reason to get rid of the permit system, don't hide behind the misery of Aboriginal women and children and the permit system. The other issue, and again, Cara knows this from her travels, is that the vexed issue of income and quarantining in the Northern Territory. And Matt from the Unions NT spoke about this yesterday as well, is that income quarantining is a very blunt instrument that makes the presumption that everyone's the same and that, that everyone has the same difficulties because of their particular racial background. I've got to be upfront, I've got a personal interest in this. I'm married to a lady who is Indigenous, and certainly her family doesn't need their income quarantined or managed. They're responsible people like the majority of Australians. The income quarantining stuff should be at the request of communities and should be targeted to deal with problems, not make the presumption, as has occurred throughout the intervention, that, that the problems apply equally across everywhere. That should be targeted and should be focused on dealing with problems, not making a presumption of people. All people have exactly the same problems because they simply don't. As I said yesterday, when I talk about these issues publicly, I do like to. I think we've made one mistake, is that we don't talk about the good stuff. And there's lots of good stuff happening in the Northern Territory and around Australia and Indigenous communities, and listening to people. Once we started talking about the good stuff yesterday, the good stories flowed, and we heard from a number of different people speaking about those things. So despite all the problems with Northern Territory, as I've said, the problems have come about, and I've sat through 2.5 decades almost of the neglect, and we can only hope now that the people's attention is focused on the issue, that things turn around, the proper resources are applied, and that Aboriginal women, children and men, older Aboriginal people are given the opportunity to participate in the real benefits of this, the land that they originally that they originally came to provide the benefits that we all know that it should. So Sharon, thanks for the indulgence. The Police Federation of Australia fully endorses this policy, and it's been a real pleasure to work with Cara, and I do think that while it might seem odd to you, my view is that the police union in this country and myself, I've got an obvious real interest in it. The current president of the Victorian Police Association is here, is with his wife Shirley Hardy-Rick. They've obviously got a connection to Frank Hardy, a real connection with the Gurindji people in the Northern Territory. So the leadership of the police unions in this country want to build a real relationship with Aboriginal communities. We think it's important, and we simply think we can't work and operate and build a better, safer life for Aboriginal people in Australia without that proper engagement. So thank you.
Couldn't even say who could visit you in your own homes without government intervention, and of course you then could have the indignity of your income simply quarantined without any consultation. It was an appalling act. In Australia, where we do value rights and anti-discrimination, and this was one of those voices that we were proud to acknowledge as one of our own, clearly a leader for the police union, but a leader for the movement, who simply stood up and said that this was wrong. And we thank you. You've been a real leader in this environment.